What's up, world? It's Spotty Wi-Fi, the king of the crypto punks, and you are now tuned in to Fired Up on the Blockchain with my guy, Travi. I get a little
fired up. I'm like, Travi, come on now. Like, you got this under control.
Yo, it's your boy Nessie the Rilla from the east to the west. You already know who does it best. We fired up on the blockchain with Travi. Let's go.
What's up? It's your Web3 bestie, Liz Morrison, and I'm Toy Encendida en la cadena de bloques con Travi.
This is It's Becky Bitch. You're listening to my guy, my Web3 bestie, Trav, at Fired Up on the Blockchain.
Yo, what's up? It's G Love, and I'm fired up with Travi.
What up, y'all? This is Sammy Ariaga on Fired Up on the Blockchain with Travi.
I'm Ray Isla, and I'm fired up on the blockchain with Travi.
Aloha, everyone. This is your boy Yassad with the band Pepper, and I'm fired up on the blockchain with my boy Travi. All right.
I'm Juliet from the So Cool Girls, and I'm fired up with Travi.
This is OSF, and I'm getting wrecked with Travi.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, friends and degens, for the thousands in attendance and the millions listening in podcast land, my name is Travi, and we are fired up on the blockchain.
Hey, Travi, let's effing go. I get a little
fired up. Woo! Welcome to the season finale of Fired Up on the Blockchain with Travi. That's right, this is the last episode of season one, and as we start to make some preparations for season two, I do have to say there's nobody more fitting to be the guest on the last episode of season one than really the man who helped it all get started, and that of course is the one and only Brian Fanzo. So I've looked back at this last year plus doing the podcast, much longer than that, having worked with people and worked alongside people in Web3, and you might be saying to yourself, what happened to Web3? Like, where did everybody go? And you know what? I ask myself that same thing sometimes. And that's really why I never really shorten the intro to this podcast, because when I think about it and I look back and hear all those people, it reminds me of all the great people who I did have a chance to meet. And so whether you're talking about the Journey NFT, or you're talking about Fired Up on the Blockchain with Travi, or me speaking at NFT NYC, NFT London, down to Art Basel, getting to know some amazing people. To be honest, none of that could have been possible without today's guest, the one and only digital futurist Brian Fanzo. So let's get into it.
Hey, it's time for school.
Here we are at the end of season one of Fired Up on the Blockchain with Travi, and it's episode 69. And I know what you're thinking, 69 for the culture. Well, there's somebody I needed to have on, because 69 is actually really part of who they are. Fanzo, your birthday is June 9th. I mean, is it safe to say that's your favorite number? I think it's a lot of people's favorite number, but I think for you, it especially holds a special place in your heart.
It does. I'm excited for 69. Congrats on 69. I will say the innocent version of that is my very first AOL screen name was Voodoo 69. And Voodoo was the name of the roller hockey team that I played on when I was, I think, 12 years old. And I'm already dating myself with an AOL screen name, so we don't have to qualify this, right? So I think this was 94, maybe. I was on Windows 95, so that's what I remember. And I put 69 at the end for my birthday. And I was the innocent. And then I got my license plate when I turned 16 that said Voodoo 69. And it was around that time, like 15, 16, when I had like kind of made the I was like, wait a second. And so, of course, I played it cool. Like, of course, that's why I'm using 69 for the culture. And, you know, everybody wins with 69. But truthfully, it's the birthday. And for most people, I always say 69 explains a lot. You know, I was born on June 9th. And so excited to be on. And 69 yes, episodes, dude. That's very big. Congratulations. On that side, we've come a long way. I know we'll talk about that, but I know so, before this podcast started, you weren't sure about, you know, that side of your world and the fact you've made it 69 episodes. I mean, the average podcast dies after 7. And the last thing I've heard is right now, the majority of active podcasts only have 3 episodes. So just think about 69. You have 69 episodes, and the majority of ones that are currently active only have 3 episodes. So from one podcaster to another and a good friend of yours, congrats and excited for the conversation today.
Thank you. I think a lot of people probably already know this just based on having listened. But if they're listening and checking in for the first time, you know, I don't think this podcast, well, I'm sure this podcast wouldn't exist if it wasn't for you, you and your podcast, all the things that you've done as far as being like a mentor and a friend. And of course, like you said, we'll get to that. But, you know, you did mention AOL, and this being sort of the end of season one, taking a small break of season two, I'm going to have to put up an away message. If you had to put up an AIM away message right now, what do you think it would say based on what's going on in the NFT land and all that?
That's a really good one to put on. It would probably be pretty simple. It would just say the pivot continues. That would probably be my away message right now, right? Because it's so funny. Like, you know, my yearbook quote in high school was "Go big or go home." Right? That doesn't surprise, you know, many people. And it wasn't very original, but that was kind of like always my, like, you know, just continue to go big. And like you know, I always say, press the damn button. You don't know what works until you try it. And if I had to, you know, a way message right now is kind of like, hey, I think we're all still figuring this out, right? Like, I think what the path that we've been on, for anyone that's been on, you know, listening to your show, especially for those that have been on this entire journey, I think we're still just figuring things out. And I think it's okay to like own that. So yeah, I think my away message would be the pivot continues. And I think, you know, maybe a lesson for anyone that's out there, I think pivoting for pre-COVID had a negative connotation to it, right? Like, you only quote unquote pivoted, or you only changed when you were forced to change, or you lost your job, or, you know, and in this, you know, I think what we've learned in this world now, I think pivoting is a sign of maturity. It's a sign of, you know, that we understand that we're always in this like curious learning, you know, stage. So yeah, that would be my away message. And don't you miss like those, like, I don't miss like your, like the MySpace 9 friends or whatever, you know, the your favorite friends. Yeah. And like, if you move somebody out, you got like a message and like, you don't love me anymore. But I do message like the AOL instant message days and like Yahoo chat rooms are still some of my favorite internet days of all time. But yeah, that's a good question. You got me thinking there, you know, we need more away messages.
Well, so it's funny because, you know, thinking about technology back then too, and if you're listening and you don't really know about AOL or instant messenger and away messages, you could probably Google that, you know, talk to like an older sibling or a cousin. There's some nostalgia involved in that for sure. But for you being someone who's, you know, a digital futurist, a technology connoisseur, all the things, you know, it's really something that, looking back at those days and seeing where we are now, it really feels like, I mean, look, I mean, it feels like the future, feels like another planet compared to the mid 90s. So, you know, let me just give a proper introduction too, because everyone listening probably already knows who you are. But if you're listening because it's in your feed or you see something cool about NFTs, I want you to know who you're talking to. And this is really only the most recent stuff. I mean, Fanzo, you've done the NFT 365 podcast, where you did a podcast every single day for an entire year. And oh yeah, by the way, that wasn't your first podcast. The Mint 365, where you minted an NFT every day for an entire year. Probably maybe every blockchain you could think of that has an NFT, or almost every blockchain you could think of. You know, and we've seen some crazy things happen, of course, through the market, but even lately with the things through, you know, Recur and things like that. As you're looking now at a lot of the things you did mint and seeing the projects and ownership groups and just the whole system change completely. But not only that, man, you've also transitioned to an artist who uses AI as a tool. And I was with you in New York City, and your art was right there at the crossroads of the world, up in lights in Times Square. You're an advisor for me with The Journey and many other projects out there. You're a speaker, you're an icon, bro. And a lot of us wouldn't be even probably involved in this space as a collector, as someone that is interested in what's going on with the technology, if it wasn't for people like yourself. So how the heck did we get here? Who is Brian Fanzo? Well, what happened on all those other podcasts and all the other digital futurist stuff that led to this weird NFT sort of blockchain world? We can't call it NFT world anymore, I don't think. I just think it's like this blockchain world. A lot of people are poo-pooing the terminology these days. Where are we, man? How'd you get here and where are we now?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate all the kind words. And I think I have to flip that as well. I would not have been able to do, you know, what I did and what the team did and what we all did for, you know, the podcast in these last, especially 2 years, 2.5 years, if it wasn't for so many people like yourself and so many people in the community that we both are good friends with. If it wasn't for like the continual support and the people that are there with us on this journey, pun intended, I think for me, part of it is like, I'm, you know, 42 years old and I still haven't figured out what I want to be when I grow up. And I'm not sure I can ever figure out like what that, the answer to like what I want to be when I grow up, is. And, you know, as both of us being dads, you know, I was sitting with my, my oldest last night, actually, and she's in middle school, eighth grader. And my oldest, we were just talking about like, she was like, Dad, I don't have, because we were watching something on TV. I think we were watching, I don't remember what we were watching, but it had something. Oh, it was the Little League World Series. That's what we were watching. And it said, you know, like they interviewed the kids and ESPN does a great job. And it said, dream job. And like some of these kids, like you could tell, like, they're like, dream job, lawyer. And you're like, other parents must be a lawyer. Like, dream job. Like, it was like sports psychologist. And like, and my daughter, my oldest, looked at me and she's like, Daddy, I don't really have a dream job or a job that I like think that I would want to do. She's like, in her view, she's like, I plan on working at Starbucks when I'm 16, just cause I want to drink free coffee. But like, that's not gonna be my dream. And I, you know, like it was funny for me because like, I don't know if we as kids had that pressure of like, what would be your dream job? Like, I think our generation was kind of in the middle of it. And I know like Gen X would say they were probably the same way. We, you know, Gen X millennials, I think we lucked out in a way where we weren't put on public pressure of saying like what we wanted to be, but we did live through I remember like high school, especially college, you know, like I didn't know what I wanted to major in until my senior year in high school. And like, and it was only because my guidance counselor kept asking me a lot. Right. But, like the reason I say all of that, and like in the little circle of things is like, I think part of that is also if we recognize where the world has come, right? Like, I mean, for me, like I started leaning in heavy on blockchain pre-COVID. And at the time, I was so not attracted to crypto because of the financial component that I kept it like at arm's distance. And like, I mean, there was multiple times where I spoke at multiple blockchain conferences and everyone would laugh and like, Brian, you don't seem like you're committed to this space and you're like, you're on the stage. And I was like, oh no, I'm committed to like, I believe in what blockchain does as far as ownership and taking back, you know, data and control and like how the internet looks like in the future. But I so struggled with what are the building blocks that we need to put in place so that blockchain can flourish. And I've been thinking about this a lot over the last probably 2 months. What were the building blocks of the original internet? We started off this with AOL, right? Like pre-AOL, like what were the building blocks to go from, you know, buying your Windows 95 CD from Best Buy and one of those boxes off the shelf, right? And taking it home and having to upgrade from like Windows Me to Windows 98 or whatever. You know, like that's how our days were. And like, how do we go from like, hey, we can type documents on these, you know, giant screens and, you know, to, hey, we can connect to internet. Cause like, I would almost like garner to say we are in that same phase of like the next era. And maybe the answer to like the bigger question is, I think we got ahead of ourselves a little bit. And maybe there were things that like, probably if the economy goes the right way, probably put us in the ideal positioning. You know, nobody could have predicted how we come out of COVID as like a society. And I think all of those things in tandem, kind of have brought us to where we're at today. I don't think we are backward. You know, I don't think we've taken a step back, you know, from when this all began, but I'm not sure how many steps we've taken forward. Right. I think we've crossed off a lot of things. We've hopefully learned a lot of things. I still think we have a lot of things that we have to figure out how to learn. But at the same time, like, even one of the first couple of times you and I ever talked before we met in person, you know, for me, like a big piece of this, like I've never been one that desires perfection as like an outcome, but I am one that has like rejection sensitivity with my own ADHD. And so like, I, when I tell people like, oh, perfection's a fairy tale, they're like, oh, it must be easy for you to fail. And I'm like, oh no, I hate it. And it wrecks me. But at the same time, failure doesn't like stop me from attempting things, right? Or trying new things. And so I think that's where we're at. I think all of us that have been all in on this space are going to look back 5 years from now and be thankful that we played in this space. Now, what do we do in the next 5 years? That's, I think, an individual question. I think it's a question that many of us are still trying to figure out, like, what are the building blocks? Like, what do we have to reset? Where do we have to focus? Like, you know, AI is a shiny object now, but AI, like, I believe AI with blockchain changes our entire world, but no one really can tell you what that looks like, right? Like, I mean, I don't care who you put on, you know, you can go from Gary Vee to, you know, to the biggest names of the, you know, the biggest thought leaders out there, from, you know, Elon Musk. You know, if you would have told us, you know, a year and a half ago that Elon Musk would take over Twitter, rename it, rebrand it, you know, now paying out creator, like all these things that have happened. So yeah, I mean, I think we're definitely in a, like, the thing I think probably, and you can, I'm sure you can attest to this more. So this space teaches us a lot about, like, continuing to evolve and not, like, be stuck in, like, you know, one path of success. And, like, let's face it, that's the future. Like, the future for everybody's job, like, everyone that's, like, worried about AI, you shouldn't be worried about AI replacing you if you recognize that you always have to be curious and continue to learn. The people that should be worried about AI replacing them and the people that should be worried about the future are the people that are stuck and say, I want to do this for the rest of my life. I don't want to do a single thing. I don't want to learn a single thing. Because the truth of the matter is, those are the people that are going to be out of job. But for the rest of us, hey, this is just, I think, the next step in a direction that we are hopefully all working, you know, in the same general, you know, vicinity.
Yeah. So you got me thinking about something, because we talk a lot in over the last couple of years in the space of this NFT land or whatever, as, like, being early, right? We talk about being early as, you know, people trying to learn about the technology. Some people talk about being early as, like, being an early holder of an NFT project or, you know, a token, and then seeing that, you know, the value of that price rise up and then being able to make a lot of money with that, in terms of, like, flipping or selling it or anything like that. So, you know, you got me thinking about two things. Like, one, you also kind of said, like, we got ahead of ourselves. And this makes me think about a wedding that I was at. And at the wedding, just, it was about a month ago. And, you know, I'm not far from Manhattan. So there's a lot of, like, high finance guys work on Wall Street and stuff. And they all understand blockchain and talk about it, but, like, they always ask me questions, and sometimes I could tell, like, do they really want to know, or are they just trying to get to their point of, like, like, NFTs are a scam or crypto is a scam or whatever. And, like, I think we're at a point now where so many people understand the blockchain technology, but they look at that space that we played around in for a little while, and they really do kind of say things like, you guys kind of did get ahead of yourself. Like, you were really onto something there. And then Jimmy Fallon has to talk about his ape with Paris Hilton on the Tonight Show. I remember watching that and feeling like, wow, like, this really is going into, like, mainstream culture. And then toward the end of last year, seeing, wait a second, there was a lawsuit that a lot of these celebrities were actually given the Bored Apes and told to talk about them, which right. Then drove the price up. You don't realize that. Like, it's funny because, and I kind of said this a little bit on a conversation with Becky, was like, it's right in front of you and it's so obvious sometimes, but you don't see it because you really want to believe that the right people are in whatever, you know, your situation is, and they want the best for the outcome. So, you know, what do you think, you know, other than right now documenting our journey, which is kind of like what the podcasts have been, the Twitter spaces have been, your YouTube channel has been, what do you think would be real quality way to show people, like, the proof that they were here, the proof that they're, you know, for all intents and purposes, an OG in the space, you know, other than, I guess, having one of those, you know, like, early, early, like, crypto punks or, you know, early Bored Apes or, you know, and you do see a lot of people on Twitter too saying, like, been in Bitcoin since 2015 or whatever. It's like, I don't need to see that in your profile, man. Just, like, let's get to the point. Like, what do you kind of think about that aspect of things? Like, what is being early? Is there a benefit to being early? Is there a benefit to just kind of sitting out and watching and seeing what develops and then jumping in, which is probably, like, what a lot of the big corporations are doing?
the honest answer, and it's not even a fluff version of it, is that I believe those of us that were in the space, our ability to do our own damn research will be at a far superior level than anyone else, right? And depending on, you know, and you can, that goes from a collector to a developer to a, you know, founder of a project to a creator of content. And I think that can manifest itself probably better in every aspect of our lives, right? Like from, and this goes to even someone that says, hey, I got into crypto, thought I was going to make money, but maybe I wasn't in or quote unquote early enough, or I didn't make the right decisions, or maybe I didn't get out, take profits like everybody says, you know, when the times are, but like, if you learn that, like, wow, when times are good, you should take profits or you should protect the bank. The next thing that you're in, that is something that is kind of building upon that. And I don't think, like you said, like part of it is kind of twofold, right? We didn't want to believe it, right? Which is part of this. The other part of this is, how many success stories have we heard and we know of things for the last 25 plus years that they were in the same spot we were and things just kind of went a little bit different of a way, right? Like I will say I was in the live video, live streaming space. Like that's where my like brand blew up initially. And like the timing was wrong. Like, I mean, I was the it for live video and like, you know, like not putting myself on Mr. Beast level, but like with Vine and live video and Snapchat, like I was at the top of that world and I didn't choose YouTube, right? I chose Snapchat and Meerkat and Periscope at the time. And, you know, the timing was off, but it's funny. Like I was on a group chat with a buddy of mine for a fantasy football that I hadn't talked to in a year. And he just told me that he cleared his live streaming business, just cleared seven figures for the third straight year in a row. And like, for me, it was like, man, and he credits me for opening his eyes to live video. And I did that in 2013, 2014. And I think for me, the timing was off on like the technology. Timing was also, you know, like I helped the Super Bowl live stream for the first time. The Super Bowl didn't live stream again for 4 years, but when they did the 4 years later, they hired a team of like 100 people versus hiring a team of me, right? So like I think part of this for me, what I've learned in like the early adoption merging technology thing is like, you can't be like that lesson didn't stop me from wanting to do what we're doing here because I can't let that stop me from doing what's next. But I also think it's probably also a good reminder. And, you know, it's a reminder that I take is that like, if you're in it to get lucky, like that is playing the lottery, right? Like, and you know, everyone always says like, you can't win the lottery if you're not playing it, right? Like that's a saying, yeah. But you also can't help design a culture or be on the forefront of where we're going if you're not willing to kind of put yourself out there. And so, you know, there's a book, I can't remember who's the author right now. It's about regrets and like, Daniel Pink has a new book out, and his like whole mantra of the book, I've seen the keynote twice. I haven't read it because me and reading aren't best friends, but like I've seen the keynote twice, and his big thing is like, we shouldn't, like the whole narrative of like, don't have regrets. Like he actually challenges that. And he's like, you should have regrets, because if you're not having regrets of things that you've done or accomplished or tried, then you're not putting yourself out there for, and like, I remember first hearing that, I was like, that just sounds like a guy trying to sell a book with a different narrative. Like I was very like, I probably wasn't at the right place to hear that the first time. The second time I heard it, which was about 2 months ago, I was like, you know what? He's got a point. Like regretting something doesn't mean that you didn't still learn from it. And it still didn't like, you know, take on what things are going. And I think for me, like regretting the, like some of the alignments, right? You mentioned like, I mean, one of the things I take a lot of pride in is like a majority of the guests that I had on my podcast were people that like, I turned down certain people because I didn't trust them or didn't know enough. And majority of the time though, they worked out. Like I was like, oh yeah, that person. Like now I will say there's been a couple where it's like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. Now to me, that's like a lesson in like, hey, like there are some people that are really good at faking it and marketing and selling. And hey, I like tip my hat, and it's also like a lesson. But I also will say, like, you know, for anyone that's out there, I've been looking at like my NFTs kind of like baseball cards. And if you would have asked me if baseball cards were valuable 20 years ago, 15 years ago, I'd be like, nope. My parents had me, you know, like I have like literally right behind me, I have boxes. I have an entire storage unit. And for a long while, the only reason I kept them is because I wanted to show my kids things that like their dad had. I had no idea that this market would turn And now sports cards have this like resurgence at a level that is insane. And I think the elements of NFTs, like when I look at my wallet, you know, I still hold all 365 from those, but I look at my wallet, like the Recur ones, like the Nickelodeon ones and some of the ones that recently were in the news. Part of me is like, the fact that they took all that money and it still failed is probably a stronger story 5 years from now than we probably even recognize. So like, I think it's part of it is like, you know, yes, you can regret some of the decisions you made, but I think don't lose hope on some of the things that you are holding for. And even if they're the lesson that you learn from them is like, hey, I invested money in this and maybe I shouldn't have diversified. Like one of the things, you know, that I'll just put out there is I've been thinking a lot about what if I did things differently in, I sprayed, right? Like I sprayed and prayed. Like I bought an NFT every single day. I also like, in my personal wallet, bought a bunch of communities, but not one of the communities that I feel is like my home community, right? Like, and so like I missed out on a lot of like, I took the decision to be like, I'm going to be active in all these communities. And like right now, like I look at like probably 6 or 7 communities that I'm still trying to stay up to on a regular basis. And I'm very proud to be a part of. And when I'm talking to people in there, they're like, wait, you're a Lazy Lion holder and you're in Knights of Degen and you're in Killer Bears and you're in Bulls and Apes. And I'm like, yeah, but I minted all of those. Like I've been in them like since the beginning. And so like, I think that is actually a really interesting lesson for me, like moving forward. But I also think it allows me to be so connected to so many people and like, you know, Crypto Chicks, you and I, you know, Crypto Chicks was in my feed the other day and I sat there and was thinking about it. I listened to the episode with you and Becky and, you know, Becky as a dear friend as well. And like, I think I'm so glad that we had that connection. Cause like, you know, for those that don't know that story that, you know, at the lobby of the hotel, when we got to hang out, you know, hungover in New York the very first time, like to me, those are the memories that nothing that happens with this space could ever freaking take away. And I'm so thankful for them. And it was a picture in a community that we connected and we had diamond dogs. And like, you know, as much as we can be triggered by some of these things when they happened, and we were in it so deep that we couldn't see like outside of it. But I think to those that like the finance world telling you things, like, let's face it, like there's a lot of people that have invested a lot of stock. I saw a couple companies that took over $1 billion that just sold for under $10 million, right? Like that. I think people can throw stones at like the NFTs and crypto because I think because there's not enough information and not enough history there where people feel like they're very comfortable to throw the stones. But let's face it. I if you believe in the blockchain and you're fired up on the blockchain, then I think the downward element of this will be, you'll be very thankful and happy that you've been on this journey, you know, when you were. And even if you weren't, if you're just listening to this is the first episode you're listening to, understanding where we've been and how and where we're going. Like, I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Travi? Like, if someone got into this space right now and they were open to learning to all the lessons that are there, right? All the podcast episodes that are there, getting active on Twitter side, I bet you they could find a lot of success, powerful people in communities, and network their ass off. Like, so in like a weird way, like how jealous are we? Like it would be the coolest things to be turned on a blockchain today, because I really feel like we survived a lot of the war and people are really gonna be able to benefit from that. And I think that is a cool piece of this whole puzzle.
I think it's important that people recognize who they're getting the information from, for sure. Cause you know, I think I mentioned that you had NFT 365, which was every day for a year. And then obviously you went into season 2 where you were kind enough to have me co-host some of the episodes there. And if it, you know, if it wasn't for folks who were legit educating, I would have definitely clicked on more bad links. I would have definitely had wallets drained. I mean, I think that there's a higher chance for people who come in right now to get tricked, because there's less overall people in the space. And my advice is just make sure that you're looking at the people that you really trust before you even go in and click on a link or connect your wallet to something or anything like that. And I think now one of the things that people have access to that maybe I didn't have, a lot of other folks didn't have, was actual real life people in their life who could show them how to actually open up their own wallet and actually how to, you know, whether it's Coinbase or something else, to do transactions into there. And it's a lot more accessible now, honestly, man. The price points, you know, you brought up crypto chicks and stuff, and, you know, I don't want to say, like, we don't talk about Bruno, but, you know, the bonds and stuff that we had, it definitely, if you're out there too, listen to a conversation I had with Becky on episode 67, sure, because it speaks to what you just said about really having that bond with folks in the community. And you also mentioned our fireside chat. We actually have that on in this feed. If you scroll to episode 4, you can hear that, which was actually one of your NFT 365 episodes, yep, from season 1. And, you know, I got into the NFT thing, right? Because I understood crypto already. We had a lot of real estate transactions and stuff. And I saw that you're able to sell a house as on the blockchain. And to me, it showed me when the quote unquote ugly monkey pictures were in the news talking about Bored Apes. When the quote unquote, like, cats with a rainbow behind it, or like whatever people were, you know, writing news articles about selling for millions plus dollars. And you're sitting there, everyone's going, why would somebody want to buy a pixelated thing? And then you realize, oh wait, there's a whole technology behind it. And that's what opened my eyes up to this idea that you talked about, which is community. And I think that community as a word, as an idea for people in the space, a lot of people kind of laugh at it as an idea, because a lot of folks who bought into a community, and by bought in, I mean spent ETH on a JPEG to be a part of a group. I think, like, if that group didn't give them access to something, I don't mean access to money, I mean access to real life events or a club or networking events or whatever. I think a lot of those folks have been, you know, kind of kicking themselves and saying, like, I never should have spent money on this. And I don't know. I really don't know. It feels like it's been a really funky 2 years where there was a lot of, I hope I buy the right thing so I can sell it, versus I just want to buy something that I really like. Or I really just,
I mean, we're all guilty of that, I think. I mean, like, and I think we have to, like, own that. Like if I look at certain decisions that I made when a time where I knew better, I still made a lot of lottery ticket purchases where,
yeah,
like, the people that were running the project, I tweeted this out the other day, like, there are a lot of people that run a lot of projects that I would never want to be aligned with in business or personal life.
And I saw that
tweet. Why the hell did I jump in? Like, I jumped in for, you know, like, there's a bunch of reasons. And, like, probably at the time, like, we could argue that we were probably doing it for, like, quote unquote, the right reason. But to your point, like, I mean, I was sitting at the pool yesterday. My daughter had a soccer party at this pool, and I was talking to somebody, and they were, you know, I live in Northern Virginia, and pretty much everyone here works for the government in some sort of way, like government contractor or work for the government. And I was talking to, and I'm telling you, like, leaders on the government side, not political side, like the actual government side. And they were asking me questions about, they have no social media presence. Like, it's like a funny world. And the conversation started where I just blatantly out said, with, like, it was like six guys and there was like two other of their wives that were sitting here. I said, you know, making friends as adults is hard as crap. Mm-hmm. And I said that, like, and, like, I think, like, I got, like, this, like, look, cause, like, you know, they don't live in this world where people say things like that and, like, are okay with, like, being vulnerable. And by about, like, a half hour later in this conversation we had, pretty much everyone in that group recognized that, like, they're staying in a job that they don't like because their only connection to people are even, and many of them, they don't even like the people that they're working with, but they're like, yeah, like, it's the friends of my kids' parents or the people I work with. And, like, for me, it went into use cases of NFTs without me even realizing, like, mm-hmm, without even thinking of it, to your point, like that. And I was like, well, actually, I was like, that's kind of where ownership in these projects, like, kind of stems from. And, like, we can now be aligned on, like, purpose and planning and, like, vision and mission. And I will say, like, that to me can't be understated, right? I think that is a beautiful thing here. But I think we probably, you know, it's that double-edged sword of, like, the financial component that was integrated into it, because let's face it. I don't know if, I mean, we both have families to put food on the table, right? We wouldn't have been able to commit to this space like we have for 2 years if we didn't understand the financial reward and the financial, you know, piece of this, you know, along with the technology and with the community. But at the same time, like, how many communities do we join? How many like memberships do you have? Like, one of the ladies that was in the pool, she was like, she had been a part of, I think she said 13 MLM projects. And she was like, I never got into those to make money. I wanted to find other moms that shared like similar interests. And she's like, everyone I got into was like people that were just people that she didn't want to be associated with. And I was like, it also made me feel better about like NFTs. Cause you're like, oh, I guess like, if you think about it, like how many people have joined a company or a membership community or a church or, you know, local, like, and you're like, whoa, I thought this was one thing and it was completely the other. That's technically what we did. I think we just did it in a more blockchain way, which is transparency and vulnerability and yes, the upside was there. Like, you know, like there, we both know multiple people that made a crap ton of money, probably making decisions that either one of us could have made at the time. But at the same time, you know, like I look at the community connection piece of this as just like it's a great mental health reminder of like, you know, hey, you have to have people and it is hard to find people. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's something we still have to, you know, tell ourselves. And in this world right now, we are more connected than we've ever been. Yet suicide rates are at the highest they've ever been. And like, we just have to own that and recognize there's problems. And I think blockchain is one of the vehicles that will change that. But we still have to kind of figure out how that kind of integrates into everybody's lives.
Yes. And, you know, I think technology is something that, you know, we've talked a lot about so far. You have a background in cybersecurity. You know, you have a technology background that's pretty different than a lot of other people. Can you talk a little bit about what your life was like? You know, you're there in Northern Virginia. Shout out Richmond, north of Richmond. Is that the name of the song? I'm going to cut this out. But
yeah, Richmond, north of Richmond.
Yeah, exactly. So
Oliver Anthony, great song.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting to see so many people identifying with that song, regardless of whatever side of, you know, the political stratosphere you might be on out there. But, you know, as somebody who's living up there, you know a lot about tech, you're seeing a lot of things of talking with people, as you mentioned, you know, working literally in or with the government. What's technology look like? I mean, what's cybersecurity? What is that? Speaking of community and working with people that you may or may not get along with, like what was that part of your life like? Because a lot of people might not know the Fanzo that we know now, like that was a Fanzo that existed way before our buddy who's, you know, talking to us about all different kinds of fun JPEGs.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've been doing a lot of reflecting, especially lately, on, you know, like for me, you know, I did a decade, it was like 9.5 years, in cybersecurity, with the Department of Defense. And, you know, like for me, it was not like, I mean, never in college did I say I want to go. I didn't take a single class on cybersecurity, not one. Like I remember whenever it was like, I had a database class and then like the next version was like cybersecurity. And I was so terrified of database. I had failed a database class my freshman year that I changed my major. Like I was avoiding cybersecurity and that. And then, you know, I got a job. My first kind of entry level job in the tech was in cyber that got me a security clearance. And, you know, and I had the highest civilian security clearance that you could have, but like, when I was the first government contractors into Iraq, and I remember I was actually thinking about this, you know, over this past weekend, you know, like going into Iraq and telling people, I'm going to deploy SharePoint and I'm going to block Facebook so that you can't use, like, I remember that. And like Facebook was just kind of taking out. This was 2008, 2009, my first trip in there. And like, I mean, I had to have these conversations where like the one, you know, actually someone that a very high ranking military official had said, like, they're not going to re-up for their next tour of duty if Facebook isn't enabled. And I remember being like, what? And he was like, it's how I stay in touch with my grandkids. And like, you want to keep me here for my third tour? I'll sign up, but you have to leave. And I remember we got it approved to where his compound did not have Facebook blocked in the IP addresses, which is just funny to think about now because like, the things that we were deploying were so rudimentary. Like they're so like, I, like today we would like anybody would be able to get around them, right? You could, I mean, like anyone that's done anything online is smarter than we were in 2009, 2010, 2011. And like, I remember like we deployed SharePoint and I remember like, hey, I need you to post this document here so that other military branches could, you know, have access to it. And I had this gentleman from the Army, we were down at Fort Huachuca in Arizona, and he looked at me and said, I will retire from the Army before I share a single policy with the Navy. And I remember being like, well, I'm not telling you to share trade secrets, but like you've done some research here and this is going to save the Navy from making the same mistakes. And aren't we all on the same team here? And so like, that was what my world was. Like my world was a lot of teaching, like, okay, a technology step forward. But at the same time, like, I mean, I remember I thought it was the easiest job ever, the first trip into Iraq and actually even into Afghanistan. We were securing their toughbooks and we were blocking a couple of IPs. And little did I know, things that I thought were basic were really disrupting people's lives and like changing behaviors. And these were behaviors that they already didn't want to do, right? They didn't want to use computers to begin with. They didn't want to have to deploy these things, you know, like, and like we were securing the drone network in Afghanistan. And like, to me, like, I was like, oh yeah, we're just going to protect this. And they're like, yeah, but the one time I get a pop-up that says update my software and I'm trying to protect a troop that is moving forward and you're not going to let me control my drone. They're like, are you going to take that on? I was like, Nope. You're right. Let me go back and like figure out a new policy, because like if my policy that I was deploying was going to do that and I was going to take that much risk. And so that was a lot of my world. My world was a lot of like tech, and you know, anyone that's done anything with the government, you know, it's hard to get the government to change anything. Mm-hmm. And then when they do it, it's very slow change. And that doesn't help anything, because I was deploying things that were not very sophisticated into a world that they probably had more sophisticated stuff on their home computer. But yeah, that was a lot of my world, you know, a lot of traveling, a lot of, you know, I think the bigger lessons for me was like realizing that like my job wasn't to force technology down people's throats, but my also job wasn't to defend like the technology. Like for me, it was like, if technology wasn't solving a problem or fixing something, or if the technology that I had wasn't the right fit, it's worse to deploy. Like, and I remember this, you know, we were in Tampa, Florida. We deployed this solution to this military base because it was a military base that was being bracked, that was being taken out of commission. And I remember they had troops there that weekend, and it completely disrupted what was going on that weekend. And at the time, like that was our testing. And looking back now, like recognizing that like little actions with technology, even in a space that was like quote unquote our test area, disrupted people's lives for like 3 or 4 more years because they had to change all these things going on. Like that was like the world that I lived in. And it was, you know, like I don't regret leaving that world. Like I was the guy that, you know, I'm pretty much the same guy I was then. Like I haven't changed very much in like who I am. I was very boisterous. I was the guy who came back and said, I know I just, you know, sold you on using this technology, but now that I got into Iraq and heard how they're actually using it, I'm now going to go back against what I said. And they're like, they had never heard of that. Like no one in that space was willing to do that. And I kind of loved that component of it. And I'm very thankful for that experience. And like, funny enough, I feel like I'm going to have that same feeling about where we're at now, like over my last, cause like I'm right at like the, you know, this is 20 years since I left college. You know, 2003 was my senior year in college. And now we're in 2023. And like, if I look at it, I had 10 years in cybersecurity, 10 years, like Department of Defense. And then I've had pretty much 10 years startup entrepreneur life. Like, so like 2 separate decades of this world. And I'm looking at like, what does my third chapter look like? What does my next decade look like? And I'm not even positive I know what that looks like, but I also know that like, it's been an interesting journey for all of these things kind of piling on. And I think for anyone that's out there, you know, nowhere, no guidance counselor, nobody could have ever told me like, this was your trajectory, right? Like none of this made sense. Like, no, I would have never thought that I would do any of the things that I'm doing on. And I think that's a cool part of like, for me, that's the, you know, the journey and the background that I have. And, you know, like I mean, I was on the IBM Watson AI machine learning team. That was the very first alpha team. The first time they exposed the machine learning code outside of IBM, in 2013. And I remember my mind being blown. They took these Twitter data sets into this computer, and this computer spit out instantly a bunch of sediment analysis. And they would tell you like through this, like, I mean, I think it was like 400,000 profiles. They would give us these crazy things about predictability of like, how people were thinking and what kind of mood they were in. And if people, this group was more positive on Mondays and how that would impact certain decisions on when they would retweet it. And I remember being like, and this is 2013, this is 10 years ago. And I remember being like, oh my, like, this is just wild. Now it took us 10 more years to get AI into the mainstream. So like, I guess that's also one of these, you know, beautiful lessons that, you know, if we look at like technology adoption, I know for a lot of people, it might feel fast. It might feel like everything changes really fast. But if we take a step back, like, man, when I was deploying cybersecurity stuff, everybody talked about it being like the pinnacle, but we're still learning how to secure ourselves and what does privacy look like. And when I think about the future, I think that's actually one of the biggest, if I had to look at like where the blockchain comes back in to everyone's lives, is AI is right now unlocking this idea of doing things we didn't know were possible. But we're getting to that point where like, wait a second, like you have all of my data and you can predict what houses I'm going to buy in the future. You can predict when my refrigerator is going to die. And are you going to disable the software like iPhone did so that the phone works slower? So you have to update like, and yeah. We're going to get to that point where it says, hold on, like, how do we as a society, you know, I know schools being close to your, you know, I was, you know, sitting in the school, my daughter's middle school, it's a brand new middle school. They just opened it. They were shut down for 4 years to remodel it. And it was funny listening to them talk. And I, part of me was like, wow, they're doing some really cool bleeding edge things. But also part of me was like putting my cybersecurity hat on, putting my blockchain hat on and was like, wow, we are probably going to get a couple years away from like certain things having to drastically change. And, you know, a lot of the stuff we're talking about right now with blockchain are just going to become the norm, right? We're going to, where, you know, like your Apple wallet, you know, which I pay for everything with my Apple wallet now. I don't even think about pulling out a card. That's going to be in there on like our data and how we share. And like, you know, like even like the school, like, you know, like we had the mother of my kids and I were sitting down, we were checking what boxes to share. And like 5 years ago, they would have never even given us the option of what information they wanted to share. And can they tag my kids on a tweet if they, you know, from the school? And now we have to start thinking about that. But there is going to get to a point where like blockchain is going to fix that and AI is going to fix that. And so, yeah, that's a long way of saying like, for me, my cybersecurity days, although it was cybersecurity, was probably no different than what it's been for the last 10 years as well, where a lot of it was like technology, humanity, you know, integration, learning from change, you know, focused on what, where this all fits. But it was, I mean, talking about wild road, like, I did an interview this morning. I told you about before we talked about the show and they were asking me about my security clearance. And I was like, yeah, I had to get a polygraph and I had the highest civilian security clearance that you could get. And they're so not used to that being like, wait, you like that? That doesn't like I don't have like the persona or like, I don't look like the person that they would quote unquote put in there or they wanted to know like what cool things, why would I have that security clearance? Right. And I always tell people like the reason I had it there was nothing sexy or cool about the reason that they made me get that security clearance. But I think at the same time, like where does privacy and security go? Like, you know, like I love seeing smart cars and a lot of the stuff that we have coming up, like super cool. Like, taking back a lot of these things that we do now that waste a little bit of time we have on the earth so we can spend more time on the earth doing the things that we love. Man, is that exciting. But man, do we have a long way to get there, right? And I think that's kind of the probably the lesson of all this is, you know, even the stuff I was deploying in 2008, you know, for cybersecurity, like what we were quote unquote preventing probably wasn't even the right stuff at the time. And what we're doing now is still just kind of like these building blocks, but yeah, I mean, I think it's fun to be able to talk about that. It's fun to be able to think back about like all these different, you know, pieces, because, you know, it also is part of the reason why I love blockchain and NFTs is it brought our worlds together in ways that we would have never probably been able to cross paths the way we, you know, maybe I don't like to say the word never, but like, yeah. That's also something that we have to like imagine the power of collaboration that is unlocked by bringing people together from all these different walks of life and all these different worlds. Like, I still think that is, you know, an unsung part of this whole space that we're a part of.
Yeah. Blockchain has brought a lot of people together. You know, when you talked about things that you loved and, you know, I think one thing that you love, I don't think enough people talk about this, is that, you know, you are you're a speaker. Like, you go around the country, you speak, they can hire you to do keynotes. I mean, based on everything you've talked about, whether you're talking about, you know, cybersecurity, technology, artificial intelligence, blockchain stuff, I don't see any reason why somebody listening wouldn't have the idea of like, we should get this guy to speak at our conference or speak at, you know, the graduation or whatever it is. What's that life like for you, man? Just being like, you know, I know that the pandemic, you know, kind of threw a wrench in a lot of people's full-time, you know, stage gigs, musicians, speakers, stuff like that. What is that life, that part of your life like? The speaker, the going around, being the keynote person, being the person that pretty much everybody, at least, you know, that I know in the last couple of years, has a high degree of respect for. And then, you know, seeing your artwork become, you know, this thing that is, first of all, very recognizable. Second of all, our podcast logo. and people kind of see, like, they're able to see that you have a wealth of information, and not just that, you're not just reading books and quoting people, like, you're actually using it on a day-to-day basis. So what's that like? And what's a good way for people who are kind of thinking about this, like, a way for them to even possibly, like, book you in the future if they wanted to hear you speak live?
Yeah, I mean, I think the public speaking concept, like, to me, like, I mean, I would have never, I mean, if you would have asked me, you know, let's just say, if you would have asked me 2010, if I would have ever been on a stage talking, or I would get paid, like, I didn't even know it was an industry. I didn't know it was a gig. You know, I left the government, got a job. Like, my dream job was a technology evangelist, which I knew Guy Kawasaki did at Apple and Robert Scoble did at Microsoft. And I remember being like, I want that job. Like, I want to be able to help people use technology without it being a sales or marketing thing, without having, like, that was just kind of like, for me, it was like this, like, cool role. But, like, even at that point, the speaking part wasn't really the part of it that excited me, right? It was more of like, wait, I can help without other things being like the driving force. And then, you know, I was kind of flung into, you know, like, when someone had looked at my experience at the government and they were like, wait, you've been speaking on stages since 2005, at the Pentagon. Like, I had spoke at the Pentagon, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, from 2005 to 2009. And for me, that was just like part of my job. It was kind of like, you know, in a weird way, like, if I look back on it, like, and if someone's looking at where AI impacts, like, we are always going to need people that are great communicators, right? Communication will not be replaced in this idea of where we're going. Like, even in communication of, like, stories about the good old days, or, you know, we all have family members that are like those people that are at the, you know, at the, you know, Christmas dinner or the Thanksgiving or whatever it may be, that, like, they're going to tell you stories and they're going to have every detail. And some of them are going to repeat stories, and some of them are going to be great storytellers that don't know they're great storytellers. But for me, like the entry into that public speaking world was, it was what other people didn't want to do that I really enjoyed doing. And part of the reason that I enjoyed doing at the very beginning, and it's funny enough to me, the same exact reason I still enjoy it today, is that it's the only time that I know for 100%, for just about 100%, that people are giving me their captured attention and their goal, or they're sitting in the audience hoping that I give them something that they can take away with, or that is like the best experience. And, you know, it can be educating, entertaining, it can be inspiring, it can be motivating, it can be any of the things. And, like, to me, like, that was, you know, it's kind of like, you know, growing up as a kid wanting to play sports. Like, I never thought about, like, I wanted to play professional sports so that I could be in the middle of a stadium and, like, you know, have all these people cheering for me. But there is an element of, like, sports and team and camaraderie and all those things that kind of go into it. But there's also, like, the impact you have on others, right? Like, when you hit a home run and you know that you just helped everyone around you. And that's kind of how I looked at public speaking in this weird way. And I think early on, like, one of the secrets, and I know I've told you this, Travi, like, when you recognize that nobody goes and watches you speak hoping that you fail or that you're boring as hell. Like, no, because we've all sat through boring teachers, boring presentations, and it's the worst. There's no one that's like, oh, I hope this guy sucks, or I hope this woman sucks, or I hope, you know, whoever we're watching speak sucks. And so, like, when you recognize that, you're like, oh, this is a pretty cool gig. And for me, like, early on, I did see it as like a vehicle for me to get my, like, grow my personal brand. So, like, you know, the podcast and I never thought of myself as a marketer early on. It was much more of like, hey, if more people learn this part of my story. And for those that don't know, I've talked a little bit about my cybersecurity background. But I had this weird complex when I left cybersecurity, went to work at the startup that I worked for before then, you kind of going out on, excuse me, on my own. I had this thing where, and I mean, I don't even know where it came from back then. I was like, I don't want people, like I just had my second daughter. I was like, I don't want people to give me, I don't want people to give me a chance or believe in what I'm doing based solely on the fact that I had a security clearance or worked for the government. Now, I don't even know if they would have, but like, so like I spent from pretty much from about 2013 to about 2016. So like 3 or 4 years, probably never bringing up that I worked in cybersecurity, never bringing up that I worked for the government, never bringing up that I had a top secret clearance. Like I had people that had hired me multiple times as a speaker, as a presenter, as an influencer. I mean, I remember I was at Dell and I was doing this brief to interview Michael Dell in 2017. And I was working with this head of PR and she had hired me at her last company. She now was working with this company and she was sitting down. She's like, Brian, I see that you have a question here about cybersecurity. And like, we'd prefer to keep that to the experts that have worked in that space. And I was like, oh, do you not know? And she's like, how would I ever, she's like, I follow you on Instagram story. Like she knew, like she, we're Facebook friends. Like we were like, and like, for whatever reason, I didn't include that in my, and I had this like weird, and like looking back, I kind of wish that I would have just owned like that part of who I was, but like, you know, it was a journey in me discovering how to tell my own story and all of that side. But for me, like the public speaking and like, this kind of goes good into like fast forwarding to where we're at now. Like, you know, it's about like the impact that you make. And like, for me as like, when I'm selling a presentation, I always tell like, you know, there's a bunch of different kinds of speakers, right? There are speakers that are names, right? Like if you have Michelle Obama that is on your roster, right? Like, and I would recommend if anyone hasn't seen Michelle Obama. I know she's not doing as much presenting now, but I've seen her twice. Been very blessed. Twice, two of the events I spoke at, she spoke at. And I tell you what, as captivating of a speaker that I've ever seen. But like, she's a name that sells tickets, that brings people to events, right? That's a whole industry. But then there's also like kind of like the author, like industry space. And then there's also like, you can speak and never get paid and make a living on it because it can be the generator of leads for your agency or your product business. Like I know Johnny Cupcakes, for those that aren't familiar with him, he's a world renowned speaker that literally owned bakeries in the UK that had funny t-shirts that he started speaking because he would speak at an event locally. And then his store would have a line out the door and he was like, hey, this is a, and then eventually it was like, well, why did you come up with a marketing? And then he became like this marketing genius that he became on. And so for me, like the speaking element was like, how do I help people see things or move things forward in like that emerging technology space? And then, you know, like I started speaking 2014 and 2014 to 2018, I think were years where I wasn't really focused on growing a quote unquote speaking business. It was more of like using speaking to help, you know, do more marketing, more content. I did a lot of influencer marketing work where I consulted with a lot of influencer stuff, but then it kind of flipped where I wanted to do it more full time because I do love being on the stage. And so for anyone that's out there, like it's a weird space because there's no recipe for like how much to charge or how do you get booked or like, you know, I always tell people like the number one way for me to get booked is to speak. If someone sees me speak, then they understand my value and will hire me. Like that's my number one, like literally the number one lead magnet. But then you're like, well, how do I get on a stage? Because the people that get on stages are people that get like it. There's a lot of weird variables that like, and I would say like in 2014, I remember I went to like meetup.com and there was multiple ones where they were like, we want someone to talk on Facebook ads. And I would just message and say, I don't know Facebook ads, but I can help people see the value of Facebook in their business. And they're like, come speak. And that wasn't my topic, but I was like, well, at least I get in front of, and like, I mean, there's one right in Alexandria, Virginia. And there was four people in a room that there was only probably 18 chairs, but there was four people. And one of them was the person that that replied to me on the meetup one. And funny enough, like for me, like that was like my start of like, wait, how can I, you know, and then like anytime there was an event locally, I would just reach out and be like, hey, I'll speak there for free. And like over time, like what I've learned is like, I don't speak for free, but there are opportunities to speak for no fee. And what I mean by that is like, if you're speaking and there are certain things that event will enable to happen, it's worth the money. Right. And I have a couple of friends that have not been paid to speak that have made seven figures, eight figures worth of revenue, because that's the vehicle to get their business funded. And actually, one of my dear friends who recently just kind of messaged me back, I started checking on what he was doing. He like just stopped speaking because his business had blown up so much. And he had like this like nuanced consulting business in Phoenix, Arizona. And so like, that's that world. For me, like, you know, like I speak at, you know, there are some speakers that speak on like only to certain audiences. Right. And like, and I will tell you, like, this is also one of those things, like it's to niche down or to not niche down. And I'm a proponent of both. Like if you have a niche, like one of my good friends, Clint, he speaks primarily only to middle school, high school, and college age audiences because his message is extremely tailored to that audience. Now, he's not going to garner as many big fees as some speakers that speak at these large like corporate ones, but he posted on Facebook the other day that he had already booked, he already spoke 50 times this year at a fee that is, you know, north of $5,000 per gig. You can do that math. And he's got $250,000 worth of speaking, and he knows his audience is this, and he has a message to this. His content is very much towards that. He plays the drums like during his present. Clint Pulver is his name for anyone to check him out. Just a all around amazing human, great presenter. So there's people that like on that side. Then there's also ones that like, you know, your book, part of your PR campaign is speaking on your book. And then like, for me, I'm more of like, you know, I'll speak, I mean, some of my favorite stories were, you know, in the same week I spoke at the Dental Hygienist Association, which I didn't know was a thing. I spoke that same week. I went from the Dental Hygienist Association. I went to the corporate machine tools event in Orlando, which was for anyone that bought machine farm tools for over $10 million or higher. Like these, like I walked in there and everyone in there was millionaires. And I was like, wait, did I get in the wrong room? They thought this was a machine. And they're like, oh yeah, these are only people that sell like the, and then during the same week. And then the third day of that week, I spoke at a pet influencer conference. Right. And like, and I always tell like, I mean, in one week I spoke to like the three most unique audiences ever. But you know, like if I look back on it and like, you know, hiring me or working with me, the other part of it is like, it's kind of a collaboration. Like, what does your success look like? What are you trying to achieve? And so I've spoke at like everything from a company that had two locations that had 40 employees. They brought me in for a full day workshop and we did a whole bunch of things from telling your story to putting your message out. Then I've also spoke at AWS reInvent, which had 34,000, you know, people in the audience. And so like, you know, I think that is kind of like the fun dynamic that exists in this realm. And I will say like, the COVID definitely disrupted this space a lot, but I also feel where we are going to learn quickly that the more blockchain, the more technology we integrate in our world, the more people are going to crave these offline experiences. And so you're going to see more masterminds, you're going to see more boot camps, more things that, you know, we're all seeing this, you know, kind of emerge. And I think all of those are going to have speakers and presenters, and you can be, you know, like I am not an entertainer. Most people will say like one of the compliments that I get after I presented is like, Brian, I didn't expect you to have me laughing throughout your presentation. And I'm like, well, it's because I don't consider myself funny, but I do understand how to keep an audience engaged. So I'm pretty good at self-deprecating humor. And I know, you know this, Trev, you've seen me on stage. Like I enjoy the ability to use that audience to keep people engaged. And so I think, you know, for anyone that's out there, I think being able to tell your story, but also being able to, like, that's the reason I think I love, like, I will tell you, like, I mean, I've studied, I love looking at like, you know, I'll look at a great documentary and I'll rewatch the same documentary three times because the first time I'll watch it and I'll just enjoy it. Right. And I'm like, wow, it moved me to think this. And then in my head, I'm like, okay, what about that documentary made me be moved to think that? Because it's the way they told a story and it's the images they use and it's the character development they use and it's the story structure they used. And those are all things that we can use to be better storytellers, even if you have like a team of two, or even if you're a parent. Like I will say, like, I think my ability to speak and what I do on stages makes me a better dad because there are certain things that I'm like, ooh, like I need to convey, especially I got teenage daughters now. Like there are certain conversations where I'm like, yeah, if I hadn't been better at like reading the cues and knowing how to present certain things, I probably would walk into a lot of, you know, bad examples and that stuff. So, it's a fun space. I think it's a, you know, it's a wild, wild west, like figuring out how much to charge, what to charge, how do you grow? Like, I mean, I went 2018, I had about 25 or so paid gigs. And then, you know, pre-COVID 2020, I had booked out for 60 plus gigs that year that I'd already put deposits down. My business had really kind of taken off. And I think a lot of that was content creation. A lot of that was me like learning, but it was also like I was leveraging what was at the time, right? And I think I'm now resetting a little bit on that and figuring out how that works for, you know, speaking and such. And I think it's one of those fields that, there's like a lot of industries that are out there where you're unsure of like, you know, how to charge or what to charge or where those things kind of go. But it's also a field that like, no matter how old you are, no matter what your background is, there's an entry path and there's an audience that probably needs to hear your message and your information, which I think is pretty, you know, a pretty cool space to be in.
Yes, sir. I mean, listen, I have a few more questions. I kept you for an hour. I hope it's okay. I'll ask you a couple more.
We're good. Oh yeah, we're good.
You know, you mentioned how you spoke and there were four people at a venue, right? It may be unpaid gigs here or there, things like that. You also, I know on your podcast, you mentioned that you had some earlier podcasts that like started off rough. They weren't as crisp and clean as, you know, they eventually rose to. And, you know, you're speaking now, and a lot of these are like standing room only gigs. I mean, I've seen pictures, I've seen video, and I've seen you speak live, obviously, in London and New York and stuff. And you've got people standing on the sides, people just rushing into the room just for like the minutes that you're speaking, so then they could rush back to wherever they were, you know, prior to that. And you know, you've spoken, you've met with some really incredible people in this space. Now, whether you're talking AI, blockchain, NFT, whatever you want to call at this space anymore. I know one person that you and I both have a lot of respect for is Gigi, the founder of Crypto Tech Women. She's been touted as giving one of the great, like how to start your own NFT project presentations out there. If you could create like a short list, if you were creating maybe your own, Fanzo's like talk or whatever, who would be like three to five people who you think might like you met in this space over the last couple of years, you have a high degree of respect for, and everybody should check out these three to five people? Who would be on that list?
Oh, I like this question. And I hadn't really like, I've thought actually about an event, like a Web3 event, you know, previously. And I will say like, I'm so glad you asked this now versus asking it like a year ago, because I will say I've also learned like Gigi would be a great one. And I will say Gigi, I got to see her, give her very first presentation she ever gave in this space. And, you know, I walked up to her afterwards and I was like, you were born to do this. And that's not normal. She's an engineer background, just for, you know, qualify, right? Like, and those of us that are like our tech background are not, we are like the exceptions to the massive rule. Like, and you're a teacher, right? And like, I will say teachers are public speakers without even like, they have the hardest version of public speaking. Cause I mentioned before I was a public speaker where everyone in the audience is there and wants to get something to take away. Don't want you to fail. Speaking as a teacher, majority of the time, either people don't want to be there, they're being distracted, you're being forced to often teach something that even in a way that doesn't even the right, like, so like my respect for teachers goes up every time, right? Like, and it goes up, you know, understanding all these different, you know, pressures and knowing all those different variables. But like Gigi, I think is a great one from Crypto Tech Women. The second one that comes to mind is Betty from Dead Fellas. And my first, you know, like Betty had his like bigger than life reputation, I would say, prior to. But like her and I weren't really connected through Twitter that much. Like we had been on a couple Twitter spaces together. But I will tell you, after interviewing her, and then, you know, interview ended and we talked for like almost an hour afterwards. Wow. She is one that like hands down I would put on the stage. I think her message, her experience, her mission is one that I think is just gold. And I think would be one that I would definitely say for people to check out what Betty has done. Even like for me, what she represents like in this space, like there are a lot of people that are quote unquote around her or, you know, in that realm that don't have, I think, the grace and the ability to deliver, like she has to deliver, of course. I've been to VCon twice, right? And I think VCon is an interesting one. And I think Gary V, of course, puts on a great event. But I also would argue, like, a lot of the people that are on those stages, I wouldn't put on a lot of stages that just because just, you know, based on, you know, what their message is, or, you know, just because someone was a founder of a project doesn't make them a great speaker or presenter, right, or whatever it may be. But I will say a good friend of mine who I've known for almost a decade, Shira Lazar would be one that, you know, Shira provides. She's a great interviewer. She's the founder of What's Trending, an internet trending show that was before internet trending shows were even a culture thing. But what I like about her is like she is great at thinking as like a content creator, but also thinking in that realm of like, you know, putting a message and a mission and a vision, you know, out to the world. So I think Shira would be another great one, you know, to see on, you know, many, you know, stages that are out there. Another one that I would say probably that's in our circle that maybe people aren't as familiar with, is Coach B. Who is, you know, working with, Meta Athletes. He was just recently recognized as the number one strength and conditioning coach, in the NCAA after, the hockey team that he works with, won the national championship. I will say like Coach B has, a way of presenting like kind of information and context. It's still one of my favorite interviews that I ever did on the show. Just like being, knowing what he likes to say, he's a life coach and a motivator that does it in the gym, right? Like, so like, although the weights are there, it's a lot about, you know, he's maturing and teaching and helping people, you know, like through their life and through their world, that are, you know, kind of walking, in this realm. And then I would say another one that kind of pops to mind, is Manushka. She goes by Single Serving on Twitter. She's a Haitian chef that has always been tapped into this. And like when I say Haitian chef, chef for the stars, like, and she's New York, you know, like New York, LA, based. But she is, in my view, one of the most grounded and in touch people with every aspect of the culture that exists in this space. And I say culture as in everything from art to artists to understanding movements and trends. And so Manushka would be one. I don't think she's been on, I think she's been on a panel, but I like, this is me being selfish. I would love to work with her to do a full presentation solo by herself, deliver one. I think she would be, you know, one of the best out there. And so, yeah, those would be ones that kind of jump to, the top of mind. I will say like, you know, NFT Bark, who is Steve, who does Coffee with Captain, in the mornings. Steve has a really interesting background in some of the things he did in insurance that like, his whole vision and mission and where he's gone is definitely an interesting one. And then I will throw the last one in, Adam Brossman he was the chief digital officer at Starbucks, who helped of course launch the Starbucks NFT. I think his story and how that all came to life and like where that's going, I still think it's one of the best use cases that we have in the space, that I would definitely throw him in that.
That's awesome. Well, that's a solid group. I'm sure you can probably keep going. And we have a lot of friends in the space who, you know, we love watching take the stage. And it's great to see people continuing to work hard. I was just curious, man, because, you know, you've seen people you've seen them on the stage, you've seen them behind the scenes, stuff that, you know, the listeners and collectors wouldn't really know about, everybody from founders to, you know, hosts of shows and stuff. So it's, you know, pretty interesting to hear your take on that. You know, I think I'm going to end it. Actually, I want to ask this other question too. So everybody knows you're a pretty big, well, not pretty big. You're a diehard, Pittsburgh fan, right? The Steelers, the Penguins, everything for like sure. That. A lot of people out there, they might not know you're actually a really big music fan as well. So if you were, you know, planning your own festival, if you were going to make, you know, these 3 to 5 musicians or bands or whatever, have a, you know, maybe put their music on a blockchain or even just create your own festival and you had, you know, endless funds or whatever, who would be some that you would, you know, want to see up there that you think everybody should be exposed to? I mean, I think it's really telling, when people hear, I think, the diversity of the music that you know you've been a fan of. So I'd love to hear who you would.
If people think my background and my career path is diverse and unique, I guess in that side, so is my. I mean, without I'm a Swiftie through and through. I've been to over 50 Dave Matthews Band concerts, right? So I have that love. OAR of a Revolution is by far one of my you know my favorite bands of all time. I'm also a big fan of like Zac Brown Band. Zac Brown Band is one I've been listening to a lot lately. And then of course, I have a hardcore rap and that side of, you know, everything from Wu-Tang to Eminem. My walk-up song being as a speaker, being Outkast. So I, of course, big, you know, big Outkast fan. Yeah. And I, you know, I told you OAR For those that don't know, of a revolution, they're like the song, I guess the two songs people probably would know, would be Crazy Game of Poker, which was, you know, a massive song through like ESPN and ABC use it all the time. And then Love and Memories, I think was their, the next most popular song, but they would be one, like they have a pretty awesome cult following. There's a great down to earth band that I think would be really cool to see like their stuff on the blockchain. And then, you know, I think there's also, you know, I think from a, you know, from a music side, you know, like I'm really been interested in, you know, I'm sure you're been seeing, I follow Timberland, you know, and everything that Timberland has done. I went to school with his younger brother in Virginia Beach, and I heard they're doing a collaboration, right? I think it's Timberland, Justin Timberlake, and Nelly Furtado. I think are I think it was Nelly, right? Is it Nelly the yep. third one? I think, yeah, I think it's the three of them. And like, how cool would it be? Like, I mean, to me, like it like those three are amazing, but like, I think it would be cool to see like cross collaborations across like a lot of the genres and in, you know, industry. And we're starting to see that a little bit more with, you know, musicians, but I, you know, it's funny. I was at that pool party, this past weekend, and I, as much as I'm like a music, like I definitely a big music fan like yourself, not as big as you, but, I will tell you, I haven't been in touch with like today's music as much as I maybe have, you know, I should have, and maybe it's just the way we consume yeah. music is so different now. But I have found myself like wanting to learn, listen more. So I've been listening to a lot more of like what's top on the charts right now, or what's the, you know, what's the Spotify top 40 of in, you know, in the rap category, a top 40 in the reggae category, or whatever it may be. So yeah, I mean, I think OAR would be an awesome one to have at like a festival. I think Zach Brown Band would be one that, you know, I can never get too much, you know, Zach Brown Band, in my world. And then, you would have to throw, you know, our good friend Spotty Wi-Fi in there as well. I love that. You know, he's one of those connections and community members that I just love and, you know, connect with, and, you know, all the things around. So, yeah, I mean, I told you, like, my music taste is about, you know, every time my playlist is so funny. And the beautiful thing is, being a dad, I see it kind of like, you know, matriculating to my kids, which I think like that's like the cool part. Although I will say, I had this like epiphany this weekend that I had a couple of things my daughters were listening to. One of them happened to be Britney Spears. And I was like, hey, I was like, this is a great song. You know, I think it was Toxic, right? And I was like, but you know, when this song came out, like trying, and the way my daughter looked at me was how I looked at my dad when he played the Beach Boys. And I had that like moment where I was like, oh my God, like Britney Spears to my kids is like the Beach Boys were to me as a kid. And so it made me feel a little bit old, but it also made me like happy that my daughters are like choosing to listen. Like it was on her Spotify like playlist. So yeah, it's kind of funny how that all kind of walks together. But yeah, I'm a Swiftie.
Have they called you a boomer yet to your face?
No, they haven't, but you know, they definitely started, you know, the language of like no cap. And like some of these things, like my daughters at first, like I would say like they like think of me as pretty in the know, where like I'm like the dad that, you know, styler, you know, what, you know, has my own style or shows up, you know, I have the Jeep Wrangler. I think they're now starting to realize that I'm out of touch in most of the language that they're using. So they're starting like that. And it's funny, it's not my eighth grader, it's my seventh grader. My middle daughter, she will start saying things and I'll be like, I don't even know what that is. Like, What do you even, yeah. So I'm starting to feel like a boomer, although they haven't called me that yet.
It's funny. It's fun looking back, man. It's fun looking back. It's fun watching the world through your, you know, your daughter's eyes. You know, obviously I'm a girl dad too. And, always trying to be better, you know, always trying to be better at things. And I think, you know, something that you and I have in common is that we're trying to get better, at what we do all the time. And we're always trying to educate other people, not on ways that they're not good or whatever, but just trying to educate them. So if they want to make themselves better through whatever type of growth and development, they have resources where, whether they want to turn on podcasts or check out a feed and, you know, see somebody who they can trust. You know, before we close up, I do want to say too, like you brought up Spotty. I'd be remiss if I didn't end the season by giving Spotty a shout out, because you and I, you know, not only did we meet him in person, but we've had our own times where we got to spend time with Spotty and Melissa, Spotty Wifey. And I don't know if I've met anybody who, you know, whether you want to call it the success or like kind of like the niche of the NFT world, the fame that he's had, who's been able to be as sort of humble and nice and really just engaging. And like, I remember, bro, like, you know, and you and I hung out during NFT NYC, you know, a lot of the times, but a lot of time I had a dip to go look at some of the music stuff. And, you know, I think like, wow, I'm going to go, you know, say hello to Spotty at this thing. And you know, hopefully he'll remember me from the time we did the podcast or whatever. And next thing I know, we're going out to dinner and we're, you know, talking about life. And I'm just like, how is this guy this real? And then you go on and you see he's got Snoop Dogg doing an interlude on one of his tracks and Jim Jones from Dipset. And you're just like, how is this person really this person in real life? And I just think, you know, you find your people, like you always talked about finding your tribe. You find your people who are cut from the same cloth, and looking at the things that he's done with his intellectual property, from his CryptoPunk to the rap thing, to now, you know, really building out in Decentraland on Tuesdays. He's got this whole Decentraland thing party going on. And, you know, you've also been somebody who's taken technology, turned it on its head a little bit, like Spotty did with his CryptoPunk, Decentraland. I can't let you go without talking just briefly, at least, about the short journey. I know it's been a long, deep dive into Midjourney, but the work you've done as an AI artist, you know, I know you never identified as an artist, but neither did anybody until they started doing something, right? Like, I mean, even Messi probably didn't identify as a soccer player until he kicked the ball and scored for the first time. You found a tool in AI where you're able to take the ideas and the thoughts and the things that you're seeing in your head or your dreams or whatever, and you're able to put it out in a way that's very unique. Could we just talk a little bit about that before we close up for today?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great way, because I think it kind of fits into all AI, right? Not even just the art side of it. Like, I think the thing that I've always looked at, you know, and this comes into like kind of like a cliche, because it was a keynote that I gave for a long while, but I always say like limitations inspire creativity, right? And it's that whole narrative, like if someone just gives you a whiteboard to draw on, you just stare at it, right? It's overwhelming as all hell. But if someone gives you, like, breaks it down and says, I want you to, you know, let's break it into four corners. I want you to put in this top square this. I want this square this. All of a sudden, it simplifies, right? But there's still, like, so there's some limitations in what you're kind of brainstorming. And, like, I've done brainstorming workshops with groups of people, and it's always amazing that, like, we often look at limitations as what it prevents us from doing. But I think if you look at what the limitations are and recognize, within these constraints, what can I create, right? Like, podcasting is a great medium, right? Like, you know, I would argue podcasting is still only about 10% innovated, right? Like, there are so many formats and so many things that people could do in an audio only format that we have not even touched, right? Like that idea and like the limitation of audio only. Okay, now if it's audio only, now we know that's a limitation, but what are the things that we could, you know, we could actually make happen, right? Like I've always joked, like I would love to see like a Gordon Ramsay type show, audio only, but done in a way where like you knew that like the food and things needed to be described in a certain way and the environment. And so like you had specialists that told stories from the, like, so like there's like that realm. And so for me, when I look at AI and like prompting, I you know, and you know this cause we text about it and it's in our, you know, our group chat. And like for me, like the idea of someone telling me like, use this prompt to get something to do something, right? Like I like looking at it and say, okay, well, why was that prompt created? What did that prompt, what are the like parameters of that prompt? And then like, how can I learn from it? And so like one of the, like the things that I started to experiment with Midjourney, which is, you know, AI art engine, and there's a lot of them that are out there now, was for me, it was less about like, what can I do with these prompts to create the next Mona Lisa? And it was more of like the reverse of that and being like, I want to convey this emotion and this is what this emotion feels like to me. And then putting that into an engine and it's spitting out something and being like, well, that didn't really capture how I feel or what I'm like thinking, and then kind of working with it. Right. And I actually, I let my daughters change my wallpaper on my computer this weekend. And they picked one of the pieces that are on my screen here to my left right now. And it's funny because the one they picked was the emotion that I was trying to capture was this emotion of like, what does the world look like upside down, but beautiful, right? Like in this like idea of like, sometimes we feel overwhelmed, but when we step back, we realize that like, yes, we can be overwhelmed and yes, it's a lot. And, you know, it has lots of pinks and purples and it has all my colors, you know, like rainbow and bright. And I, you know, and I think the piece of this, I think it's been so exciting for me was that I don't think I'm still learning how to express myself. I guess it's probably the greatest lesson in this whole podcast episode is like, although I'm a keynote speaker and I've done, you know, 9 podcasts and I've been very blessed speak in 76 countries and travel the world and have all these things, I'm still learning all of the different aspects of expressing myself. And one of them was expressing like that emotional feeling, especially around ADHD. And, you know, for me, it's been 10 years since I was diagnosed, but it's been about 5 years since I talked about it publicly. Mm-hmm. And I still struggle. Like still to this day, I wrote down this morning, just a couple of, you know, pieces on a sticky note where I was feeling these certain emotions. And I was like, how do I help others like that feel the same, visualize that, right? And that's ultimately what I put into the AI art. And so in a weird way, like the art, I don't go often into it. Like I have like, you know, the biggest compliment that I get with my art right now has definitely been, you know, anyone that sees the art out there, it doesn't even have to come from my feed. They know it's mine, right? Like your podcast logo, you know, and it's not even just the colors, but it's also, I think for me, there's like a certain aesthetic that I've always like been drawn to. And like, and I give you credit in when you and I first connected, I told you this the very first time, I think the very first time we ever had a conversation was like the way that you look at art, the way that you looked at music, and the way that you looked at like impact, like, you know, from not only working with kids, like I appreciated that. Like even like, I remember, you know, I was laughing. I was like, wait, this guy has this many tattoos and he's like sleeved up and he's not like, I like whatever our like picture of like the people. And like, I think both of us, you know, I think we did this in our One Love episode. Like we don't often like, we realize later in life that the things that help us stand out, the things that make us who we are the things that make us unique. But through most of our lives, the things that make us unique, we don't get practice telling the story or expressing because we are kind of like sheltered. Like you don't talk about sex, religion, and you know, politics. And like, I think that's, those are all, it's a disservice for us as a whole. And like, for me, like talking about like my emotions, talking about like how I feel, like I was the kid that wore pink shoes. And part of the reason I wear pink shoes is because like I wanted to express that I was different. But I will tell you, there was many times where I would wear, and I still to this day, like if people don't recognize this, like there are certain times where I know that me wearing something or me speaking up in certain ways will cast a reaction. And I have to like convince myself to like still lean in. Like I just want to be that very clear. Cause like for some people like, well, Brian, you're so comfortable in your own skin and you like live this. And I'm like, no. Like, and like weirdly, like my daughter, I didn't wear my Crocs. My daughter's got these bright yellow Crocs into school and I didn't wear them to school. And I'm like very much like the known, like laid back, don't give, you know, two shits about what's going on. And I'm pretty, you know, comfortable in my own skin, but I'm also one that like, I recognize that like, me being comfortable, if it impacts somebody else, like how is that going to feel or whatever that may be. And so like for me, like for anyone that's looking at AI, it could be art, AI prompts to be more productive, AI for what it might be due for your business or your life, or like even if like you have a tough conversation that you need to have the conversation with AI unfiltered. Like, and I always say like my, like talk with it, not at it, and start to like I was brainstorming this weekend with AI, like my daughters were doing a bunch of stuff. I was sitting by myself and I opened up ChatGPT and I started just going through a couple of things like brainstorming. And I will tell you, if anyone looked at that, they're like, what the hell is that guy doing? Because nothing that I was putting in there was about like generating an outcome. But I was kind of like, if I had someone to talk to about like, what does this all mean or how does this all work? And so for me, like the art has come like a very cool circle on that. I will say, you know, I sold a bunch of it as NFTs. And then I had to learn another lesson as an artist that like, I didn't know I was going to have to learn, right? One of them being, are you creating art for yourself that people might buy? Or are you creating art that sells? And I had a couple of people come to me like to collaborate. And I will tell you, I did not enjoy creating art to facilitate this collaboration. And I had to back out of one of those collaborations. And the person reached out to me just recently and said they had a lot of respect for me being like, hey, that's just not my, and I will tell you, it would have probably made me some money. It made me some good money, but the element of it, like, wait a second, I'm not doing this for that as my output. And I guess the moral, the way I'll tie this back together is I think we need to have more things in our lives that we just do to do, like we just experiment. And it doesn't have to be art, like just allow ourselves to kind of have that, because I think I had lost that. And then I found it in AI Art. But then I found that people wanted to buy it and sell it. But then I found it started to pull myself a way that I was no longer comfortable with. And probably the biggest lesson I've learned, you know, now that anyone that's listened to this much of the episode, of the, like in 20 years since I left college, the thing that I probably have learned is to be aware of, like, to be like self-aware enough to be able to like try things, go down paths, and then stop and throw it out the window and start over, or stop and be like, hey, that's not where I wanted to go. And like, I this weekend I created a little bit of art, and that I have no intention other than probably using it on some of my social images, using it to share. And it was so much fun. And it kind of brought me back to it, like the art of creation. But, you know, I would tell you at 42 years old to find a new path of making an impact and expressing myself, I mean, how cool is that, that AI? It's like I still think it's like one of the best AI use cases for anyone that's overwhelmed or you have family members that are scared of it. Like, don't think about AI as what it's going to replace, or, hey, I want to be more productive, you know, writing emails. Like, to me, that's like, okay, that exists. But like, what if you could discover something about yourself that you never knew was inside you or was possible or that existed? And, you know, like, Travi, I'll give you some flowers here at the end here. Like, you know, I remember when the very first Twitter space, we talked about this before, but the very first Twitter space that you were doing, and I still believe to this day, you were sandbagging me in a way, because you were nervous about putting on this Twitter space, and you came to me, you know, and this is also a sign of someone that is mature and someone that is a creator at heart, right? When you're asking people for help and you're looking for people to mentor, like, to me, that's such a strong character trait. And I remember being like, you know, you got this, own your message, be yourself. And then like, you know, 8 minutes into you running the Twitter space, I'm like, damn, this guy's got it. He's a seasoned pro. But like, there's something to be said about just doing that and kind of stepping into new things. It's a whole nother thing to press the damn button over and over again, and then continue to lean in. And for those that don't know, like, Travi, when Travi and I started this recording this podcast episode, Travi, you were giving me a little bit of like your plan for how this season's coming together, your little bit of time off, and what you're moving forward. Think about that into where you were when you and I first connected. And like the fact that you're a creator that are bringing people on this journey, and that, you know, working with sponsors, and you have all these things going on. Like, I tip my hat. Like, I love being a friend of yours. I love the relationship that we've built. I love what you're doing with the journey. But I also think you're a beautiful example of like, when you try something new, it's easy to try something new. What's hard is to try something new and then continue to expand on it and go down that journey and that path. And I think, to me, you know, no one will ever regret practice in telling their story and practice in pushing what they believe is possible of themselves. And you've done both of that for this, you know, 69 episodes of this podcast. And I think that's just a cool aspect. And hey, I took a lot of that lesson too. Like, I mean, I don't think I even would have collected art early on if it wasn't for my connection with you. That kind of opened me up to these collectives and these groups that were, I was like, whoa, I didn't even think about that. And then that also allowed me to start to appreciate what I liked. Cause I was, you know, I've been to the Louvre twice and I remember being kind of bored at the Louvre, and it sounds horrible even saying that, cause I shouldn't have been. Like, it was my lack of maturity of like understanding what I was experiencing. And I was a little bit spoiled. I was on government dime, but like all of this kind of comes into like when I started to experiment with art, I remember thinking, and you know this, like my first couple art pieces, I was like, no one's ever going to like, I probably created, I don't even know, 400 pieces before I let anybody, no one in my circle had seen a single one. Cause I was like, I was just doing like the colors I liked and the things I liked. And then when I realized it was making an impact on others, it was like an aha moment. And a lot of that has to do with, cause like you introduced me to things that I was, you know, able to experience. So to me, that's what this is all about. And, you know, congrats on 69. I appreciate you having me on this episode. And I hope for anyone that's out there, you know, I think be curious, be willing to put your, you know, try new things, and then be willing to lean in completely. Even if you're unsure where that leaning is going to go, because, the journey of what you'll gain along that way is worth it.
Thank you to everybody for sticking around and listening to today's interview with Brian Fanzo, advisor, digital futurist, speaker, former member of the Department of Defense. Like, this man has done so many things, and I'm just happy to call him a friend, and I'm happy to call all of you my friends too.
Season one of Fired Up on the Blockchain with Travi has been nothing short of a journey. And as we document our journeys, we're not stopping anytime soon. I just think that a lot of us are looking at this world of this digital renaissance and we're trying to figure it out still. You know, I think a lot of people really want to do great things. And many of those people have been guests on this podcast. So I think I'm going to have to do an episode to kind of bridge the gap between season one and season two. Take a look back at some of our guests. Take a look at some really cool things that are still happening in this space. And really take a look at where we're going to be going. Because you know what? If you're listening to this and you've been on this ride, whether you've been here from the beginning or you've kind of popped in every now and again, I just want you to know that you're respected. And I want you to make sure you're getting some quality, not just entertainment from listening to this, but some really good feedback, information, whatever you want. So you hit me up, of course, at Mr. Travis, though, on the old Twitters. That's at MRTRAVISTHO. And thank you to everyone who's been a part of this, from Zealous to Unstoppable Domains to Disco Studios to so many others out there. And this is not something where I'm collecting money to do this podcast. This is just something that I'm doing a labor of love. And I've loved meeting so many of you in real life. I hope to see some more of you at some future events. And as the market still continues to grind as slow as it is in this crazy, mixed up, kind of nerdy, kind of cool, brand new world of NFTs and Web3, I hope you're finding enjoyment out there, whether you've gone to do a real life job or you're doing some really cool stuff creating on the blockchain. It's all good. There's no judgment. Never feel like there's anything wrong with doing what you've got to do. But listen, we're going to keep on going and we're going to keep on doing what we always try to do. And that is, of course, bring one love to Web3. I will catch you next time in season two. Peace.